Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. The U.S. U-20s are up 26-2 in three games in the U-20 CONCACAF Championship after a 6-1 win over Trinidad on Monday night and another heavy dose of Tab Ramos pragmatism, or, you know, whatever you want to call the tactics that they're playing with right now. What are we getting out of these games, Greg, aside from a lot of goal highlights?
Very little, Bells. It's so hard to take anything meaningful, to make even meaningful evaluations of players in this like week of a competitive pool. CONCACAF pool, not our own player pool.
Right. Right. That was not a typo. We're up 26-2 on aggregate over Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands and Trinidad and Tobago, only one of which is a sovereign nation, mind you. And
Trinidad was supposed to be like the toughest opponent, and I'm sure that's still the case. They were the toughest opponent, and I don't think it necessarily means that we did a great job passing the test. I just think it means that it was a very easy open notes test in this round.
Yeah, the toughest opponent allegedly was not very tough because we didn't play that. I didn't think we played very well. Did you?
I don't know. I'm going to say no. No, I didn't think we played well. And it just sort of depends on what you want out of it. And so if you're somebody who just is saying, like, the result is all that matters, then I guess we played fine because we scored two goals in the first 5 minutes. And after that, everything else was academic. But it was really, like, I didn't get to see any of the things that I'm watching and trying to watch for in these games to learn about the player pool. And obviously, as a sort of fan and my main focus on the senior team, maybe that's not what these games should be for. They're not supposed to be for that, but that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like, well, let's talk about the Trinidad game because at least it was a single-digit victory. It seemed like what we were doing was just lumping the ball along. I did some counting of what can accurately be described as hopeful long balls, and I counted conservatively 20, mostly from McKenzie and Matt Real, and a lot of those came after we were already up 3-0. It was like an early round FA Cup matchup.
Yeah, and these weren't necessarily just lumped balls. I think there was a purpose. Like, I think it was by design. I've talked in the past about how one of the things I key on when I want to know what a team's tactics are is to watch their center backs in possession when they have time. Mm-hmm. And like you just said, Real and McKenzie were clearly instructed to hit a long ball, and not just any long ball, like out of the back. Like, they were hitting long balls up our right flank towards Akinola. Is that what you saw?
Yeah, that was most of it. Because the combination play came down the left flank, and the long ball came up the right flank.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought too. So I don't know if that's like Tab really like being a matchup coach and like knowing that Trinidad's weakest position is their left back, so we're just going to play percentages and just go after him time and time again. Like, for people listening, I don't know if you've seen all of them, but the third goal came from McKenzie on the ball with time. Like, center back has the ball, no pressure whatsoever, just lumps like a 55-yard ball up towards Akinola, nowhere near him. Like, it goes directly to the Trinidad left back, who takes it on his thigh with no pressure and hits it about 8 yards away from his body. And I don't even know if Akinola was the guy there at that point.
It was Justin Renix who pounced on that, yeah.
Yeah, Renix just pounces on it, runs straight at the keeper unopposed. The keeper commits to Renix, so Renix cuts it back nicely for Pomacall.
Yeah, Pomacall.
But yeah, it's just such a non-competitive goal. Like, it's not that goal doesn't exist in competition. Those tactics don't exist in real competition. There's no way to evaluate decision making, or, I mean, it's just so shoddy.
Yeah, that one was the shining example of shoddiness in the game. But even the second goal was a pretty hopeful cross from Akinola from the right wing. I mean, his service from the wing was abysmal last night, and it was cleared poorly, and then Mendez touched it down to Renix, who banked a shot off a Trinidadian defender into the goal. It was scored as an own goal, but you know, so I don't know, man. That there were some nice goals in the game, but a lot of that kind of just sort of shoddiness. I sort of think of it as Tab Ramos being pragmatic at the expense of the beautiful game, but you don't really see it that way. You see it as like what do you see?
No, I think even that's a bit of a cop out. Like I know we're not going to be Manchester City or Barcelona, you know, peak late 2000s Barcelona. I know we're not there, but at the same time, the gap in quality between our players and these islands, you know, comparatively makes us actually better than Manchester City playing in the Premier League. We have a much bigger edge over our opponents than Manchester City has over any of its opponents.
Right.
And Pep Guardiola isn't playing the system he's playing because it's pretty. Like, that's not, Pep Guardiola is also a ruthless pragmatist. He just believes that the best way to beat a team is by playing this kind of soccer where you overwhelm them with your numbers and movement. And I just don't think we really saw any of that kind of, again, I'm not looking for us to duplicate Manchester City's system. But there's a lot of in-between where we could have maybe seen even a few three-player combinations in the build-up phase rather than immediately lump it long, let Akinola abuse somebody or let the guy sort of fall on his own sword and then we try to score the garbage goal.
Right. Well, what I wonder about that is if what we're doing there is creating bad habits. You know, it's one thing to sort of be to just be disappointed in the quality of the soccer. But I do wonder if, like, this reliance on the long ball to Akinola and, you know, hoping for mistakes from inferior opponents isn't just bad for the future of the team and, to a certain extent, of the players.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that, and I think it's... it reminds me sort of what we've seen the past few cycles, going back almost 4 or 5 years with the women's youth teams, where you just, if you're putting sort of all your eggs in the, we'll just overpower them, we'll be more athletic, and we'll just, you know, bulldoze our way towards results. I think that does say something about the program from sort of old to young, top to bottom. And I don't think it's saying what we want it to say, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, so the question I'll kind of throw back at you then is, if we concede that this is the pragmatic approach, like this does just, is it okay to just sort of get the results, especially with this group? Because this isn't the group, you know what I mean? This is a hoop to jump through. We have to sort of babysit these games with somebody to make sure that we're playing in the real games in May, right?
Right. And there are going to be real games later in November too. I think Honduras is going to be a real test, and Mexico, of course, will be a test. Jamaica could end up beating Mexico in that group, and you know, there's a couple others.
Would that sort of make all absolve Tab of any responsibility for playing a certain more attractive style here? And again, I'm saying attractive, but I also think a lot of times attractive is more effective. But again, I'll concede that Tab's going for the result here. Is that sort of just okay then? That it doesn't really matter because this isn't really our U20 team. This is a formality for these first five games.
I don't know. I guess when we're up 3-0 at halftime against Trinidad already, I would have liked us to come out and say, hey, let's just possess the ball and try to break them down with passing combinations in the second half. If we concede a goal in sloppy fashion, maybe we go back to this quote unquote pragmatic strategy, but I don't like what it signals about the about the program.
Well, then my last question would be if that is sort of like acceptable, sort of like where does that end then? Well, if it's acceptable to be pragmatic against Trinidad in this game at 3-0 up, what about in the next round when we have to win to get to the World Cup? Like then are we sort of all, clinching up and playing this way for those games just to make sure that box gets checked and we get to play in the World Cup? And then when we get to the World Cup, are we still playing that way? Like when do we commit to what we're going to be?
Yeah, that's a good point, because you would think pragmatism would come into play more acutely the tougher the competition is. So this would be the opportunity to not be so pragmatic, to be a little bit more ambitious.
Yeah, that's what I wish. I wish this had been more of an attempt to signal our intentions for what we want, especially after the failure of this men's team last year, like signal our intentions of what we want to become, what we aspire to be, rather than almost taking a step backwards in the other direction.
Yeah. Well, we want to
put on stages to U20 World Cup.
Right. Well, we want to have Tab Ramos on the show at some point. So Tab, if you're listening, we will give you a full opportunity to explain what happened here. And, we're going to stop kvetching about it right now.
explain yourself and your 26-2 goal difference.
Yeah. But, we all know that 26-2 goal difference isn't, that shouldn't be the open shut case. I know there are a few people who think that way, but I don't think Tab thinks that way either. Let's move to the player assessments. There's 20 guys here. I think we've learned a little bit about each of them.
They definitely all played. Go ahead. Who's your first name on the list?
Okay. I'm going to do it. In a not very cute way, I'm just going to run down from who I think is the best performer down to the worst performers, and I have sort of four categories. First category is the guys who have performed well, and I think the best is Alex Mendez. I thought he was the best player on the field last night against Trinidad. That is obviously a debatable opinion, but just in terms of his thinking ahead and his passing, I think he's sort of on another level from everyone else, including Ulianes, his good friend in Los Angeles. He has 3 goals and 2 assists in the tournament, but I think he's been involved in a great deal more of the goals, either in like keying the move or getting things started. And he's had a few near misses, one on a probably for me the play of the tournament from the U.S. so far, which was his turn about 40 yards from the goal, and he had a rip that was just barely saved by the keeper.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that I do like to see, that sort of inventiveness, not just like his turn away from danger that created his own shot, rather than just sort of the U soccer style blitz past people and be more athletic. So I agree with you. I think Mendez has been the standout for me. Because he's been one of the few guys who has been able to showcase some level of sophistication. And I'm not saying no one else is sophisticated. They just maybe haven't really been in a great position to showcase it.
Yeah. And we have an interview with Alex later in the show, so be sure to stay tuned for that. The other central midfielder who I think a lot of people would say has been the standout is Brandon Cervenia, FC Dallas FC Dallas youngster who's been playing at the Tulsa Roughnecks this season in USL. He's got, I guess if you want to draw distinctions between him and Mendez, Cervenia's got more defensive bite than Mendez. And I think that, just to go back to Mendez briefly, that would be the one caution I'd offer on Mendez is he doesn't stop a lot of stuff in the middle of the field. And he doesn't look like he's going to stop a lot of stuff. So even though on the ball he's our best player, he's definitely not a destroyer in there. And Cervenia has served that role. I think he's been a big asset in that way.
He's been asked to pick up more of those duties, and he's done a decent job of it, right?
Yeah, and not that there have been a ton of those duties to handle, but he's done. If anybody's been doing destroying in the middle of the field, it's been him, and he's also converted a lot of that into useful possession. He had a really nice goal last night to open the scoring from about 25 yards. And he, I think he had an assist in the first game. So he's right up there with Mendez for probably top performer, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he has looked good. And I think some of the things I've liked from him are he almost has like a Weston McKennie ability to really like find an excellent like attacking solution out of a non-attacking situation where we might not even have clear possession of the ball, and he's able to win a challenge while also hitting kind of an unexpected pass to somebody and putting him in a good position to go forward.
Yeah, I'd agree. You mentioned earlier a little blooped pass to Akinola early in the game last night, kind of a loose ball.
That yes. Loose ball that he manages to like just kind of clip over the onrushing defender. So again, just sort of like inventive techniques, and it's not just always, you know, hitting someone's foot, but it might be finding a way through a defense or over a defense that not everyone would see.
Yeah. Okay, moving along. Uli Yanez, I would say, is the next guy. He's given us the most bang for the buck of any attacker. Has 5 goals and 4 assists, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of that came against the U.S. Virgin Islands, but he only played half of that game. And I think you put together the idea of the cheat code theorem.
Yeah, yeah. Uli Yanez is basically like playing like he's a... It looks like you're kind of watching a video game play out where they don't make mistakes. So, and you're like, that wouldn't be real. No one really does that. His first assist or his assist in his first appearance, where he took that ball from like a 40-yard ball over his shoulder at full speed, and he just like stops it on his foot.
He stepped on it, I think, right?
Did he?
I think he did.
I thought he took like a flawless first touch and just like essentially caught it with his foot on the run. Like it just stayed on his foot while he was running. Maybe he did step on it.
Well, if he stepped on it, that is almost more impressive because you have to like move your foot out of the way and then step on a ball that's coming over your shoulder to control it perfectly. Either way,
also, it was a nice touch. I'm now realizing this isn't even the one I was thinking about first. This is the like second game, right? Where he had like his 3 goals and 3 assists.
Yeah.
But you know which one I'm talking about. The long ball that he took over.
Perfect touch.
And then holds off a defender and then finds the exact right cutback for an easy tap in. His first assist was probably even better, and that was in the first game where it's a ball over his head again and he's running down the flank. And he is sort of holding off a challenge the whole time, and he takes one touch with his head and just puts it out in front of him, and it's still bouncing. And then he uses the outside of his right foot to just kind of like float a perfect ball onto somebody's foot from 6 yards out to smash in.
Yep. That one, Akinola headed that one in. That was, both of those were probably, you know, among the most beautiful goals we've seen.
Yeah. That first one, the one with the outside of his right foot on the bouncing ball is the video game where you're like, no one really does that.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're looking for somebody to show that they are head and shoulders above the competition, Uli has consistently done that. He's sort of done what he's pleased down that left wing against our 3 opponents. He came off pretty early last night after putting in another good shift, getting another goal. The other one, the other attacker who's done really well is Paxton Pomykal. I forget his exact stats. I think it's 3 goals and an assist and, you know, a lot of creative energy. Clever player. I have my doubts about his long-term prospects for the national team, but in this tournament, he's more than paid for his airfare.
Yeah, he seems to sort of be involved with every attack that when he's on the field, like every attack, he seems to be involved in it. Every good one, at least. Everything that turns into a goal.
Yeah, a lot of it, at least.
And this is where I'm really careful because you don't want to just go by sort of the number of goals or assists or even, like, chances created here in these sorts of formats and tournaments because we're going to create 100 chances. You know, we're going to create this many. So you have to. I want to keep an even closer eye on what Pomacall's doing. And even within that great chance that he's creating, is he doing everything right? Like, is he putting the ball to the shooter's foot so the shooter doesn't have to take an extra touch? You know, I mean, like, all of those things weigh in.
Yeah. He had a nice assist on Mendez's goal last night where he took it to the end line and then pulled it back.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see – there were a couple times where he did get to the end line against Trinidad, which is surprising because he didn't really get to the end line against Puerto Rico, and that was sort of my criticism of him in that game. It's like, if he can't get to the end line against the Puerto Rico U-20s, how's he going to do it at the MLS level or even the international level? But I saw him do it a couple times last night. So I think he had his best game against Trinidad, a goal and an assist. And a should have been assist. There are plenty of those to go around too.
Do you think he keeps his spot on the roster for the next stage?
I do, because I think the other two wingers, which we'll get to later, Dorsey and Akinola, have been sort of the big losers of this stage of the tournament. They're great guys, I'm sure, but I don't think they've measured up. We can get to that in a minute.
All right.
A couple more good performances. Justin Renix has been a pleasant surprise for me, at least. He has 3 goals and 5 assists. Again, you know, the numbers schmumbers. But Renix has looked like a useful attacking player. He drops in and combines pretty well as sort of a false nine and seems to be a decent finisher and has a decent passing instinct as well. I think particularly of the goal Mendez scored last night, it was a throw-in from Gloucester to about waist high to Renix. Renix flicked it to Pomacall, who charged forward to the line and then pulled it back for Mendez. It was a nice, simple little nice pass from Renix. And he's done a lot of that sort of thing throughout the tournament.
So he's a little connecting forward. That's going to be important.
Yeah, and I think he's probably earned the right to stick around in the second stage of the tournament, just as Pomacall has.
Yeah, and I asked for those two guys specifically, Renix and Pomacall, because I'm assuming that the extra firepower is going to come mostly on the attacking side of the ball. I know that we have some other ones, and we can get into those too. But the real like big hired guns are the way Amen. Sorry, I mean, like, whoever, I don't know how many of those guys we've made available, but that's who I think of when I think of, like, the replacements coming in.
Yeah, it looks like the replacement pool is going to be Amen, because Weah's going to be with the senior team, okay. And so is Sargent. Amen, Soto, perhaps Carlton, I don't know, and who
then
else?
Then, like, Durkin.
Yeah, Durkin, Serginho Dest. I mean, Amon would be a major upgrade at the wing, and I think Carlton would certainly be an upgrade over Dorsey or Akinola, and probably Pomacall too.
All right, but I'm derailing you here.
The last sort of good performer is Julian Araujo, who didn't play against Puerto Rico, looked fine against the U.S. Virgin Islands at center back, but wasn't tested at all, and then had an excellent game, I thought, against Trinidad last night. He was tested a fair amount at right back. He's a player who's shot up the ranks of the youth national team setup in recent months. He's one of the underage players on this team. He looked really tough, like really tough to get past, and physical, maybe even a little bit too tough. He comes in pretty hot sometimes. But
And remind everyone where Araujo's playing. And basically, I mean, remind me where Araujo's playing.
He's at the LA Galaxy Academy playing for Brian Kleiman.
Right. I honestly couldn't recall. Okay.
He came up in the Barca Academy down there in the Southwest somewhere. And he also got a few USL minutes towards the end of the year. Promising player.
Okay. And making a good accounting of himself here, kind of building his stock up in the youth pool.
Yeah, I thought it was striking that he would start at right back over Manny Perez, who has sort of been a favorite of Tab Ramos's, and I think was at least in my mind, was close to being the starting right back for this group a couple months ago. And I mean, don't want to read too much into it, but you could potentially read into it that Araujo has surpassed him on the depth chart.
Because the Trinidad game was the game, right?
Right. Yeah, all it was for all the marbles, Greg.
All right. So that's a solid group of six right there. We think they'll continue to be the, at least if not the starting group, that at least they'll be in the rotation for the qualification stage as well, should we advance.
Yeah, I mean, put a gun to my head and ask me how many of those six are going to be playing for the national team, and I would put the over under at one, you know.
Yes, that's the fun of this, and that's where I get into this being just a group that's sole job is to get us across the line so that the actual sort of full strength group can come in. Not this group of six, but the full 20.
Yeah. I'm going to try to move quicker here. A couple guys who looked okay, but I would like to see more from, are the fullbacks, Jalen Lindsey, who was a sort of an attacking menace against Puerto Rico, but didn't play against the U.S. Virgin Islands because he went back to not Kansas City. He went to Utah to be on the bench for the SKC RSL playoff game. And, you know, his availability may be in question for this weekend as well. And then, so, you know, he looked pretty good, but I want to see more from him. Chris Gloucester, the left back, is sort of in the same boat as far as I'm concerned. He's a Hanover 96, U19/U23. He sort of split his time between those two sides over there, and he's okay, I think, but didn't lock down the spot necessarily.
All right, for the two, especially for fullbacks, I'm going to give the same sort of give them the same caveat that I kind of give like Cannon and I guess even Ben Sweat against Peru. If you're playing a style that you don't keep the ball for extended periods, or each buildup doesn't like have some rhythm to it, they don't get the time to like go forward and get involved. So if we're just getting the ball and under no pressure knocking it way up wide to Akinola, like what's Gloucester going to do? He's not going to outrun the 60-yard diagonal ball, so he's going to just sit at home and watch Akinola play. Like the style leads to those fullbacks sort of just being spectators.
Yeah. Although, like we said, there was a little bit more attacking impetus up the left flank last night.
Mm-hmm.
And Gloucester did get forward a fair amount. The end product just wasn't quite there. At least as far as I can remember, there may have been one or two decent balls across. But mostly what happened is he would get the ball in space on the wing and his cross would get cut out at the near post.
Okay.
Anyway,
I don't care for crosses anyway. All right.
You want everything pulled back to the top of the box.
Everything pulled back. Just keep soccering your way through it, guys. All right. Who's the next tier of players in this group?
Slightly below the Gloucester Lindsey category, I would put a whole boatload of guys. You know, let's throw Brady Scott in there with Gloucester and Lindsey. He looked pretty good last night under limited duress. The goalkeeper from Köln. He seems to be the first choice goalkeeper. He had a nice save on a deflected free kick. Other than that, didn't have a lot to do, but he was pretty assured coming off his line when he needed to be. Now, next category would be slightly below that group, and I'm going to put Isaac Anking, Matt Real, Anthony Fontana, Mark McKenzie, David Ochoa, Frankie Amaya, Manny Perez, Sam Rogers, and Juan Pablo Torres in that group.
Okay. Now, for like casual fans, and I mean like casual serious fans, because I assume not a lot of casual fans are listening to our U20 podcast. But for the casual serious fans, like the surprising name in that list would be Mark McKenzie, right?
Yeah,
that's got to be the most surprising name.
Yes. So maybe that's the only one we need to talk about, because McKenzie was a little sloppy for my taste last night against Trinidad, and some of those mistakes would have been punished by a better team.
Very sloppy.
Yeah.
Almost like he thought he should be like taking risks like this because it was such a poor opponent.
Yeah.
There were some really like head scratching decisions he made.
Yeah, some passes directly to the feet of Trinidad that launched counterattacks that, of course, went nowhere. But there was one time where he tried to touch the ball around a guy and got tackled and gave it up just outside of his own box.
Yeah, because he tried to touch it around one guy, didn't get tackled by that guy. He actually was trying to touch it through two players and just got swallowed up. Like, that's not the kind of thing that you get away with in an MLS game, even.
No. So that's a little troubling, probably correctable, you'd think, but our central defender situation is not fantastic at the moment.
Right. But he was the guy who was supposed to come in and, like, at least be the one we could rely on. If Chris Richards doesn't make it into the next stage, fine. At least we have Mark McKenzie to sort of be our anchor. And he did not look like a really sturdy anchor in that one appearance.
No, he didn't.
So we'll just hope that was an outlier.
Yeah, that's the hope. And we're hearing, I mean, the word on the street, the hot word on the street is that Chris Richards is not going to be able to join for the second stage.
Ugh.
So I've heard that from two different places.
So we'll need a lot more. We'll need McKenzie to be more reliable for the next, even just for the next stage, right? Or will we get away with those things in the qualification stage as well?
I don't think we'll get away with them. No, I think that they will be punished. So maybe Sam Rogers has a really good game tomorrow night. I think he's probably in line for some minutes, and he wasn't terrible against Puerto Rico, but had a couple of sloppy moments of his own. We'll see. I think that's a concern.
But this list of like eight guys you just read off, like there aren't right now. I mean, sometimes you just get somebody who takes a big jump in development, but these aren't guys that you're really expecting to make a lot of noise in the next year, 2 years, 3 years at the senior team level.
I mean, there's some thought that McKenzie could, you know, develop quickly. So that's why his inclusion in this category is kind of disappointing. Cause I think he has the physical tools and the experience at MLS at a young age to sort of be in that conversation. Not great, Mark.
All right.
And then I'm gonna be kind of hard on the last two guys because I think they have sort of earned their way out of this camp for the next stage. Not to say that they will, not to say that Tab Ramos will agree, but I just think Ayo Akinola, overall, his soccer acumen, his decision making, and, you know, his ability to anticipate stuff and combine with teammates just isn't there. And I realize he can sort of beat up on a back line, and that's, I suppose there's some value in that. But I think he's been the same player since the U-17 World Cup a year ago, and he's still that same player, and that player is not good enough to play for the U-20s when we have players like Carlton and maybe Nick Taitagwe and Jonathan Amon available. And the same goes for Griffin Dorsey, the Indiana University player. He's gotten some goals and assists, just like just about everybody, but he's looked a level below the rest of the attack in this lineup.
One of the interesting things I thought about Akinola was in the first like 35 minutes of that game against Trinidad, where it was clear the like plan was to loft balls up to him. For that being like the plan and the pragmatic approach, the goals sure came from like the other side of the field.
Yep.
Other than that one where the left back for Trinidad just gifted it to us at the top of the box, Akinola didn't really provide a lot of clear chances. Like, he wasn't connecting great. He didn't have great vision once he did get the ball out there. I don't know. I also was not terribly impressed, especially since it seemed like the game plan was to send everything through him.
Even when he got isolated with somebody, nothing came of it, you know?
Right. Which is, again, struck me as like, if this is the pragmatic approach, we got to work on our pragmatics.
That's it. That's what I got from the U-20s. They got games Wednesday evening and Friday evening, and then we'll get the changes to the roster from Ramos within 24 hours of the end of that Friday game. I'm hoping we'll see Chris Durkin, Sebastian Soto, Jonathan Amon. I hope we see Jonathan Amon if he's not going to be with the senior team. And maybe Carlton and Serginio Dest.
Tagui would be a really cool one on that. Because I just have seen, he's just sort of this myth to me since he's been hurt for the last year and a half. I don't think I've ever really seen him in action. We don't even get random goal highlights from the weekends like we do with Haji Wright and various others.
Yeah, he's an apparition at this point. But, you know, a lot of people rate him highly, and including the folks at Schalke at certain points. Just had a lot of injuries, and if he's available, I hope he's there, because Tab can make six changes. He would be the sixth in my book.
Yeah, those six changes really have the potential to change my enthusiasm level for the remainder of this tournament.
Yeah, I think Soto would be really fun to see. I think if Durkin could slot in at the sixth, then Cervania could push up into the sort of the box to box role, and then you have Mendez as more of a 10. Could be exciting. We'll see.
Yeah, that could start to get fun. And then I'm praying that we get some like gorgeous flowing soccer through Amon and Carlton and Soto. And let's do that, Bells. Let's do those things.
Yeah, I'll keep my fingers crossed, I guess I'll say. Let's talk briefly about the senior team roster. It came out earlier today from Sarakin. 28 guys headed to a European camp for friendlies with England and Italy.
I have a lot of enthusiasm for this roster.
Okay, what are you enthusiastic about?
First off, it blows my mind that we just brought all of the MLS guys. Like, that blows my mind. Like, Tyler Adams is here. I wasn't even processing. I was barely even like processing the losers of last round's games, like Reggie Cannon and the DC United guys. I was like, maybe he'll give those guys the break at the end of the season. I didn't think there was any way in hell we would see Adams or Nag, like guys who are still alive. So that's the first way it blows my mind.
Yeah, that is interesting. I did not expect that either. I guess the thought is they're gonna get a 2 week break anyway. Might as well play soccer.
Yeah,
it's the silliness of MLS playoffs schedule.
Right,
they bracket it right around the international break,
and they're so close to the end of the season that I guess they just figure they'll have plenty of time to rest. So it's not like you're dragging on a season. Like it's wrapping up. They're all gonna get a break. But yeah, that kind of makes me think that Sarakin's going out calling sort of what he considers the best roster he possibly can.
Minus Michael.
That's kind of what it looks
minus
like
Michael
to me.
Bradley, your favorite player of all time.
I do like Michael Bradley. My first note was that we're actually just Russell Knauss away from the best 23. I feel like that's the only snub, other than Jonathan Amon going to the U20s. Knauss is the only other guy that I really wish was in this group.
Yeah, I would take Knauss over Trapp, personally, and Amon over Green, and then, you know, more or less happy with it.
Maybe give me Emmanuel Sabi somewhere, but you know, there's time. There's still time for you, Sabi. You'll be the next Scandinavian. We just do one Scandinavian at a time.
That's right. You can't have too many Scandinavians in a camp at once. Lord knows what would happen. Jorge Villafania will make his return at left back. I think that's probably, I can't think of a better idea for the second left back. We're going to have three right backs, Yedlin, Cannon, and Moore.
That seems unnecessary, doesn't it?
It does. So that makes me wonder if, well, actually none of those is still in the MLS playoffs. So scratch that thought. I guess I do wonder.
Right, that maybe he's going to send people home, right? After the first game, he's going to send a lot of the MLS guys back.
Yeah, I think that's probably what's going to happen. Adams, well, who knows if Adams will still be in it. It's not looking like it. But Trapp and Nagby sure look like they're going to be around in the playoffs.
I think you're selling New York Red Bulls short, or you're just giving Greg Berhalter a lot of credit.
And Berhalter's, I think people betting against him so far have lost money in the MLS playoffs. And if, assuming Columbus finishes the job against New York on Sunday, then we're looking at Will Trapp and Darlington Nagbe as the only MLS players on this roster who will still be around, still be in the playoffs, I think.
Viafania.
Oh, yeah, Viafania. Okay.
But yes, overall on this roster, I think it's super exciting. I think the idea of Weah, Pulisic, Adams, McKenney, Sargent as five of out of a front six in some combination, that's really exciting. Whether it's, I don't know, man, like the permutations get kind of mind-boggling because there's no clear sixth person. And we've already talked in at length about who could potentially be that sixth person, but
we should block out another 30 minutes right now to talk about it. Is everyone ready for that?
now that Roman Gall's been called up, we have to start from scratch again.
Yeah, clear the decks. Here we go. Who's going to be the number 10? No, I'd like to see Nagbe tried there, and maybe see Gall off the bench. Well, we can figure that out next week. We'll dive into the roster and talk more about the lineup early next week. Any other thoughts on the roster at first blush?
Does the Walker Zimmerman call up mean anything to you? Does that do anything for you?
It's a little bit of a head scratcher. He had an ignominious end to his MLS season. And
are we just flying him halfway to his next team so that it's a little easier for him to start his season?
He's going to Israel, right? Is that what's happening? He's going to Israel?
I believe so. I thought that's what the report was like a month back to little fanfare.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I feel like, you know, we have a couple other new guys like Sebastian Letjet coming back. I still think that's kind of a big deal. I think he was kind of in the Kenny Seth category where they're not necessarily part of the young guns crew anymore, but they never really got a chance to be the young kids because when they were, they suffered terribly untimely injuries. So it could be like a new signing. Sebastian Letjet could be like a new signing for this cycle.
Yeah. He had that really sad injury against Honduras right after he scored the opening goal.
Right. In like his first qualifier, and I feel like his hometown. So I'm curious to see what he can do, whether he's sort of Paul Areola-ish or whether he's Jonathan Amon-ish. I don't think he's necessarily the same player as Jonathan Amon, but do you think he'll be like an attacking wing type player? Do you think he'll be a shuttler in central midfield?
I favor the latter slightly in my predictions, but I don't really know.
Or worst of all, is he going to be our standard shuttler in wide midfield?
Yeah. A tucked in wide six. Yeah. The really exciting thing I think is that front six you mentioned, that front six minus one of Pulisic, yeah. Weah, Sargent, McKenney, and Adams with somebody yet to be named alongside McKenney and Adams.
It's going to be Will. Will we see a Will Trappless starting lineup against England?
I don't know, man. I'm kind of bummed about that already. It's going to be that same 4-1-4-1. And the strategy will be possess the ball.
All right, yeah, cool lineup. Or a cool roster. I'm excited about it. Everyone, I'm very excited about the roster.
Man, you are excited, aren't you? You know who else we should mention is Ethan Horvath. Had a
good shout.
Monster save today for Bruges in Champions League. I think they're up 3-0 last I looked, and so they're putting themselves in a good position to move on to the Europa League out of a group in the Champions League that includes Atletico Madrid and Real. I mean, and Borussia Dortmund. So no shame in them not advancing in Champions League. He's started three straight fixtures for them. It came out,
good on him.
Back from the dead, Lazarus style.
Shut down the 19th place team in the French Liga.
Not French, Belgian.
No, he's playing against.
Yeah.
I'm talking about their opponent.
I see.
Only the highest caliber competition in the Champions League.
Well, that save, you saw that save he had from point blank.
Yeah, it was a great save. Yeah. Awesome save, and that's a really sexy save. Like those are the best ones for goalkeepers. I love those. Just like the barely getting a hand to it, but like having to move your hand into the. Anyway, I just really like that save.
Yeah, it was great. Let's be done. We'll come back.
Yeah, let's come back and talk about it next week in depth with this European vacation for these U.S. players.
Yes, and don't go away because right after the break, we're going to have an interview with Alex Mendez. So be back in a second. Our guest today is Alex Mendez, the 18-year-old central midfielder for the US U-20s who recently signed with the Bundesliga club SC Freiburg. Welcome to the show, Alex. Honored to have you here. How are you?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So we'll get into your background a little bit later, but let's start with last night. US 6, Trinidad 1. You went 90, got a goal and an assist. How do you think you played? Overall,
I think I did okay. I think, I mean, obviously there's always room for improvement, and there's just little things that I know that I can improve on. But overall, I think it was a good like team performance, and I think I contributed well.
Not to get too deep in the weeds right off the bat, but so what do you think you could have done better last night?
I just think I could have gotten on the ball more, and just get on the ball more and like create more danger. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like the team has performed overall in these last three games? It's obviously been a lot of lopsided contests, but in terms of measuring ourselves, you know?
Yeah. I think we've been doing well. There's some of the players haven't played like with their clubs. Either they haven't played full 90s or like including myself. It's been a while since I've played a full 90-minute match. So like playing these games are important so we can get into our rhythm. And yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like you hadn't played any competitive soccer since what, the DA playoffs in June or July?
Yeah, the last competitive game was actually the last international friendlies that we had versus Venezuela and Jamaica and
Of course,
yeah,
that was in like early September, right?
Yeah.
Anybody you've been particularly impressed with through these first three games, like surprised at how well they've done among your teammates?
I really like how Brandon has been playing, and also Julian yesterday was great yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a tough mother bleeper, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
They didn't get by him. Okay, well, soccer fans are getting more sophisticated, I think. And I think American soccer fans are getting a little more sophisticated. So I wonder if you can talk about the tactical approaches for these three games a little bit, you know, without giving away too many secrets. For instance, like what was the attacking design last night and what was your role in it? Like what were the instructions?
It's nothing too specific. It's just, Cab obviously wants us to get on the ball and just create danger and like set the tone early from the start of the game so that they know that we're just going to keep coming at them the entire game. Mm-hmm.
So aggression, I guess, was a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. More of an attacking style of play.
Okay. Well, let's go right to the other big news with you lately. And we'll come back to the national team setup later, but you've signed with Freiburg, a Bundesliga club in Southwest Germany that's known for developing talent. Congratulations on that, by the way. That's a big deal.
Thank you.
Around what time did you know European clubs might be interested in giving you trials? And can you, you know, as much as you can, I'd love to have you walk us through that process.
Yeah, there was, I kind of knew, like, since, I'd say, like, 2 months before the Academy playoffs. But I just wasn't sure that that's what I wanted to do. Like, obviously, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, I want to go to Europe. But I just didn't think it would come now, or, like, I would go now. Until I kind of talked it through with my family and, like, my advisors. And we all thought as a family that's the best thing for me.
What was your thinking up until then? Like, did you think you would kind of rise up through the Galaxy system and then move to Europe?
Yeah, those were the conversations that like, if I thought I was gonna keep developing at Galaxy and keep on going through, like, starting my career there or started in Europe. And, you know, like, this soccer is crazy. The timeline, it can go by really fast or really slow, but if you don't take the chance, then you'll never know.
Right. So how did Freiburg get tipped off to you? Were they watching USL matches like me?
yeah, that's where they so I think when I got to Freiburg, the first game they mentioned to me was the Las Vegas Lights game and the Seattle Sounders in the USL.
Huh. Yeah, I remember that Las Vegas Lights game. That was a good game for you.
Yeah, so those were the two games that they, like, kind of highlighted when I first went and, like, spoke to the main guys.
So you went in trialed with them, what, in a couple weeks after the DA final? Is that right?
Yeah. That's right.
Well, you told Brian Sciarretta, who had a good piece with an interview with you a week ago or so, but you told him that Freiburg was just better at communicating with you than the other clubs you trialed with. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, when I got to Freiburg, it was obviously at first I was like, damn, like, the language is different and it's obviously difficult, like, more difficult to communicate with them. But they were, like, the players and the staff, like, they're all, like, really, like, welcoming, and they're all trying to talk to me. And at first I didn't really think much of it until I went on my other trials and I saw, like, what it was like there. And it was just, I was, like, more distant to the players. Like, it just didn't feel right. Like, obviously, like, the soccer was obviously there and the quality's there also, but it was just the feeling of where I was at. Like, did I like it? Did I feel welcomed? And that kind of thing.
So who set up the trials? Was it the clubs reaching out to you and your agent or vice versa? Do you have a sense of that?
It was kind of like both. It was like if I was up to it and because they wanted to see me.
Well, that's cool that Freiburg was welcoming. That's going to be a big culture shock for you, or maybe it already has been, to move from Los Angeles to essentially the Black Forest of Germany.
I mean, I think the biggest part is just like I'd say the food for now, but I mean, I'll get used to it over time.
You learn into like bratwurst, or I guess I don't really even know what Germans eat these days, but.
Yeah, no, it should be fine.
So you've been there already, right? You've been living there for at least a month or so. Is that right?
Yeah, for about 3 weeks.
Okay. So you've been training with the U19s?
Yeah.
Okay. And you expect to start playing with them in January? Is that the plan?
Yeah, in January, yeah.
Because you turned 18 after the registration window closed.
Yes.
Okay. So what kind of feedback are you getting from coaches there? What do they want you to work on? What do they like about your game?
They like how they told me that I had the like a bird eye view of the game. Mm-hmm. And they just told me that things that I'll have to get better on are my 1v1 defending and like some of the where to be at in like certain aspects of the game. Like more of it is just defending, which I kind of like, I know that I have to improve on. Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the Germany is a good place to work on that, because those games are dogfights.
Yeah.
You came up with Brian Kleiben as your coach for a long time, you know, possession based football kind of famously. And I want to get into that also later, but I wonder, you know, how is the training and the philosophy at Freiburg different from Kleiben ball, or does Kleiben ball translate everywhere?
Yeah, it kind of translates everywhere. And it's just, I'm grateful that I had Brian, because I've trained at different places, and some of the coaches just aren't, I'd say as intense. And I like it when it's intense. And like growing up, you have Brian screaming in your face, like telling you it's not good enough or it is good enough, like good job. Or he'll tell you if you suck or if you're good. And like growing up with that, it helps a lot, because now if someone tells me, oh, like you suck, like it's obviously gonna let me know how I'm doing at that moment, but it's not going to like put me down or anything. Like, I just know that I have to do better. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is at Freiburg. Like, the coaches are, they're demanding, and like, it's nothing new.
So it's similar in that way to Brian.
Yeah. And then obviously the soccer, it's always intense, and you have like people fighting for their jobs and stuff. So yeah, it's intense. Hmm.
Feel like in terms of footballing philosophy, do you perceive any differences between, you know, what you came up with Brian and what you're encountering at Freiburg?
Yeah, I think at Freiburg it's just, obviously it's more physical, and that I'll grow into it over time. Mm-hmm. But like the style of play, they want to keep the ball and have the ball, and like I'm used to having that style of play, so I think that's another reason why I chose to go there, because of the way that they will be playing. Hmm.
Exciting, man. We're all rooting for you.
Thank you.
So basically, you're alone there in Freiburg? Where are you living? You live in a dorm, or they get you an apartment, or how does that work?
Yeah, so for the time being there right now, I was in the dorms at the facilities. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure that once I get back from qualifiers, then I'll get my own apartment.
Okay. Well, hopefully it snows there a lot, doesn't it? Hopefully you get used to the snow.
Yeah, I still haven't. It was already pretty cold before I left, but yeah, they were telling me that it snows there.
Yeah.
Which is something I'm not very used to.
So what other expats, like what other Americans playing in Germany have you connected with already? Is there like a easy way to get in touch with, of course there is, but like how's the communication between the guys who are there, like, you know, Chris Richards, Sebastian Soto, maybe some of the older guys?
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, when I was there, I was kind of just focused on myself. Mm-hmm. I was kind of just like taking that time like very seriously and like trying to adapt as soon as possible. And So that's what I was kind of doing and, like, focusing, like, putting my focus into. So I didn't really, like, contact them or anything. But I'm pretty sure once I get back, like, that's going to be something that I'm going to be looking forward to.
Cool. Let's talk about your background. Where exactly did you grow up? I know you grew up in the LA area, but, like, what part of that gigantic place did you grow up in?
Yeah, I grew up in South Central LA.
Okay. So how did you get into soccer? Your father?
It was my uncle. Like, he liked, well, my family kind of liked it, but my uncle was the one that was kind of forcing me into, like, playing, getting into a team. And yeah, I joined a team that was like that played at a park near my house, and that's where I started playing. And one of the players he's at Galaxy now, his name is Cesar Rivera. His parents, we played together in a team, and his parents were like, "Oh, like, can we talk to your parents?" And I was like, "Yeah." I didn't think much of it. I was just like, "Yeah, like, they're over there." And so it turns out that they wanted me to play for another team that, like, they played farther, which at the time was, like, far, because, like, where I grew up, it wasn't, like, you wouldn't go play anywhere else, like, past, you know, like, the boundaries of your house, you know, where, you know, you can, like, go. And so I started going there, and then that's where we met Brian. Not right when we got there, but when I was about 9 years old is when I met Brian. And then, yeah, we were in Barca, USA at the time. And then we played there for a couple years. And then that's when Brian went to Chivas, USA.
Yep.
And then he brought all of us over. And I played there at Chivas for, I think it was like a year and a half. Like a year and a half. We were at Chivas, and then we went to Galaxy, and I was at Galaxy for 3 years.
I see. Yeah, just you and Efra and Uli and probably other guys and Brian,
yeah,
sort of moving together all the time.
Yeah.
You know, aside from getting a thick skin, what have you learned from Brian? Like, what, I mean, I know it's probably a lot, but what's kind of like the key things?
I think it's like the biggest thing I'd say I learned from him is just the mental side of the game. Every time I used to get hit, like, I'd either cry or I'd stay on the ground, like, until like someone came out and helped me on. And like one day he just told me, it was actually me and Uli. He's like, "You know what? Like, if I see you guys crying on the floor one more time, like, you guys aren't going to fucking play." And from there, and I was like, "Oh, all right, like, it's like that. So yeah, after that, that's when, like, things changed. And then, yeah, that's where it started, where he was like, it's the mental side of the game, where it's either like you're trying to get into someone else's head, or like you don't let them get into yours, and you have to manage the game, and just like little things that I learned over time.
Yeah. No, keep going. I want to hear all of it. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's just little things that people don't think it's like a big part of the game, but it like the mental side of the game, I think plays a really big part in the game.
Yeah, speaking of the mental side of the game, I saw you took a penalty kick in the DA playoffs this summer where you, I think you stood there for like 30 seconds. No, it wasn't 30 seconds, but it was a while, like 5 seconds. What are you trying to do there?
No, that's just something. Actually, Brian showed me like when we were like 14. And he was like, "Yeah, like Brazilians, you know, they stare at the keeper, you know, kind of let them know, like, you know, I'm shooting this PK, you know?" And instead of them getting you nervous, like, you're just staring at him, and he, like, keepers never have that happen, so they're like, you know, like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just kind of a, and then it also helps you just relax and then just focus on yourself and how you're gonna hit the ball.
Yeah, that was, I got nervous watching you do that, so I can't imagine what the keeper thought. and I was, you know, 1,000 miles away. Can you point to a game or even a moment when it was apparent to you that you were on track for a career in the sport?
No, I think it's just playing, like, just playing the game. I just get, just playing important games and getting a result, or even just like learning from, like, let's say the Academy Finals, like the first year that, we lost to FC Dallas, the Academy Finals, that, like, that really hit me, because my parents, like, they don't usually go to my games, and they went to that game and I didn't play and we lost. So, like, that game really hit me, and that's when I kind of told myself, like, there's no way this can happen again. And yeah, so from there, it's just like little learning experiences that, like, make me like the game more and more.
I forgot to ask you, what do your parents do when you were growing up? Are they lawyers, movie producers?
No, they just, like, my mom, like, whenever like she could, like, she would work and, like, you know, like, give to our family. We grew up, like, not having much, but she always made sure I had what I needed.
Yeah. So something I'm pretty curious about is how much exposure to the first team LA Galaxy 2 standout prospects got while you were there. Did you train up with the Galaxy first team quite a bit?
Yeah. I trained with the first team. There was a moment where, like, we were training with them like daily, and then we would train with the second team, and then every once in a while we'd go with the first team.
Okay. So obviously signing a deal with the Galaxy was something on your mind. What ultimately persuaded you not to do that? I mean, I have my guesses, but I would love to hear your take on it.
Yeah. No, it was just the kind of, like, family, it was just like a family, decision, and it was nothing like that I had against them. It was just what was better for me, and, like, or what we all thought was better for me.
Mm-hmm. Did you, I mean, if you don't want to answer this, fine, but, I gotta ask, did it seem like it might be difficult for you to get in with the first team, like, because of the Galaxy's poor record on that front?
I wouldn't say that. I just think that, it didn't, like, fit my situation kind of, like, to stay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You played a fair amount of USL minutes with Los Dos, as we talked about earlier. Would love to get your opinion on the level of that league and whether it was a good place for you to develop for a few months.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely, I wouldn't say it's the best league, but it's not the worst league. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference, even though there's sometimes where, like, I wouldn't say it would feel easy, but there's a big difference when you go from academy to, like, USL games, even, like, for anyone. Like, you go in and obviously you know what you bring to the table. And, when, like, playing USL games really helped me a lot, because even when I went back in the, like, the DA games, there's just a lot of, like, little things that I learned there that, I used, like, in the DA games, and it helped a lot. And I feel like that's one of the reasons why that, I just felt more experienced kind of on the field when I was playing in the DA games, like the semifinals and just games like that. I just felt, like, more mature and experienced. And I think it's a lot of it had to do because of the experience and exposure I was getting in the USL level.
That's good. That's good to hear. 'Cause there's so many young players like yourself getting an opportunity in USL. So it's good to hear that it was useful for you.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your game. I like watching you play because you seem to really enjoy passing the ball, and you seem to have you seem to have an idea of what to do with it very quickly. Like, maybe talk about your enjoyment of passing, and you know, how do you achieve that quickness of thought that is apparent when someone watches you?
I grew up watching, or like being, Brian was like a really big Barca fan, and he always like, oh, you know, Messi, like Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, like those players, are the best, like watch them and like you'll see why. And so like growing up, that's kind of what I watched. Mm-hmm. And like I would see Xavi, and he wasn't the biggest guy on the field ever, and he was just like you know, like another level. Same with Iniesta, like those guys are small, and same with Busquets is like, I'd say like one of the best midfielders. And yeah, they just understand the game so well without having to do all this like extra running or having like the physical appearance of like everyone else. And I just think it's the way they play the game that I kind of like. And so I was never like a big guy, so I feel like as long as they don't get close to me, then I can play. And I feel like I have the vision to do that. So I just try and put it to use as much as I can.
When it comes to that vision, how much of that is, you know, requires sort of a mental discipline to constantly be checking your shoulders, or, you know, like how do you get to that, that vision? 'Cause I even noticed last night there were several moments where, you know, you clearly already knew what you were going to do when the ball came to you, and it was like a quick one touch, or maybe two touches, but usually one. So like how do you get to that?
I guess that's just part of reading the game, and you kind of know if the ball's coming to you, or just kind of knowing there's a possibility that you'll get the ball. And just before that happens, you know, just kind of look around to see what's happening or what can happen when you get the ball. So that's kind of how I see it.
Mm-hmm. What do you need from your teammates for your game to really shine?
I don't know. I wouldn't be able to answer that specifically. I just think that, let's say like an example, like Uli, we've been together for years, so he knows what like I like to do, and yeah, I know what he likes to do, and so we just kind of understand each other in that way. So that's why, like, I'd say like me and Uli have a really good connection on the field.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah,
you posted a video of Guti, the Spanish midfielder, on Twitter a couple months ago. It's a player I hadn't thought about in a little while, but it was an awesome video. And, you know, I can sort of see the parallels between his game and yours. Who, you sort of already answered this question, but I'll ask it anyway. Who do you model your game after?
I say like Xavi or Iniesta.
Okay.
But I really like Guti too. I watch him all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. He's left footed, rangy.
Yeah. He's nice.
You haven't played, so aside from those friendlies in September, you haven't played much competitive soccer for a few months. How do you stay fit and sharp? Like specifically, what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, before I left to Germany, I was at home, and I would go like with my agent, and he'd just like run me. He'd just like have me stay fit. Obviously it's not the same like rhythm, but it's something that it just keeps you going. And I did that for like a couple weeks, and then I went to Germany, and then once I started there, they're like mid-season, so when I got there, they told me like, once I got there, like, oh, you need to get fit so you can like, you know, like be up to par with these guys. And so yeah, we trained every day in the afternoon, and in the mornings they had me either doing like an endurance run or in the gym and stuff. Hmm. Yeah.
Huh. All right, back to the national team setup, and then I think I can let you go here. I saw a picture on social media of you and Soto and Richards and Dest, Serginho Dest, and I thought, as a proud American, that is my country, you know, a diverse group of kids just balling out together. Can you talk a little bit about the cohesion in the larger group? Like, you guys get along well?
Yeah, we get along well.
Who's funny? Who's the funniest?
Like overall, or like people that are here right now?
In the U20 pool, like including the guys who might, you know, who aren't available right now.
I'd say probably like David Ochoa, Richie funny, Serginho's funny, Jalen. There's a lot of funny guys. There's a lot of funny guys.
Good to hear. Okay, good to hear. Do you follow the senior team closely?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
They've had some struggles in the midfield over the last few international windows. When you watch them, what do you think would be your best role in that group? Obviously, that's maybe a ways down the road, but
right.
But you must think about it.
Yeah, I see myself playing like an 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of the role you're playing right now.
Yeah. I'd imagine they put like Pulisic at the 10, and he's just like really dynamic there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think as a 8.
Just imagine Pulisic's not in the picture. Could you play the 10? Could you play the 10?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. I'm going to get into the Mexican-American questions here real briefly because it's on a lot of people's minds. Your parents immigrated to the U.S. from Mexico. I think I read that. That's correct, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about the choice between, not necessarily for yourself, but just in general, the choice between playing for the U.S. and playing for Mexico for a Mexican-American kid. Like, what are the pros and cons of that choice? Or, you know, take that question any way you want, in any direction you want.
Yeah, no, I think it's more of a, I wouldn't say a problem, but it's just like, when I'm back home and let's say I just came back from like a U.S. national team camp and I'm back home, like my friends and like my family, because they're like all Mexican, they kind of like make jokes about me being American, but they kind of know that like it's just like kind of like jokes. It's nothing too serious. They're just like oh, like, you know, you're playing for the U.S. and your parents are Mexican and kind of thing. Mm. But they obviously, they're like joking. It's never like serious.
They're teasing you. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what could change that so that someday it's an equal shot for both countries, you know, for a kid who grows up in the U.S. to Mexican parents? Would that ever change or
not? I mean, yeah, I think it's just like about opportunity for me. And obviously, like, I'm grateful for like everything that, that people are like anyone that would do something for me. Like, I'm just grateful for that. So like, I feel like when opportunity comes, depending how big the door is, like, you have to take it. So yeah, that's kind of where I stand.
Okay. Do you think U.S. soccer is welcoming to Hispanic players?
Yeah, no, I think so. There's, especially on this pool that I've seen right now, there's a lot of like Hispanics, and they're all like, everyone's the same and they're all welcomed. And yeah, that's something that I take, that like I see, and like, it makes me happy.
Good. That's good to hear. All right, man. Is there anything else I should ask you about? Anything you wish I was asking?
No, I mean, I don't have anything in mind.
Okay. Well, Alex, good luck to you, and thanks for your time. Good luck the rest of the week.
Thank you.